Boosting the minimum wage has become a rallying cry for low-wage workers across the country. It's also a campaign issue. Republican presidential candidates weighed in against raising it in their last debate. But as a new book illustrates, there are some Americans who can't even count on earning $7.25 an hour. Living at the global poverty line, they are eking out an existence in America on $2 a day. Catherine Eden is a professor of sociology at Johns Hopkins University. Luke Schaefer is an associate professor at the University of Michigan, and they're co-authors of the new book, $2 a Day, Living on Almost Nothing in America. And they both join us now in the studio. Welcome.
Oh, thank you.
I want to start out with you, Catherine. The World Bank defines poverty in low-income countries as living on less than $1.90 a day. So in a high-income country like the United States, how do you even pay for rent or utilities on $2 a day?
Well, of course you can't. And I mean, that's sort of the point of the book. I, in the early 90s, spent 6 years traveling the country asking low-income single mothers about their budgets. When I kind of returned to the study of poor people's budgets in 2010, I was really struck by the fact that I kept running into households that had virtually no source of cash income coming in. I remember really clearly the first woman I met, her name was Ashley. She lived in the La Trobe Homes in Baltimore. And when I came to see her, she had a 2-week-old baby. She was visibly depressed. She was unkempt. She was having a hard time supporting her baby's head adequately as she rocked her. As we began talking, it became obvious that there was no food in the house. More importantly, no baby formula. She literally had no cash, although she had this housing subsidy. So I began to wonder, since welfare reform, we knew that welfare reform had driven down the rolls dramatically from almost 5 million adults in the U.S. to only about 1 million. Was it possible that a new kind of poverty had kind of arisen right under our noses that was so deep no one even cared to look for it?
So you've studied poverty in America for decades, but you really trace this sharp increase in poverty in the last 15 years to welfare reform.
Well, in the 1990s, we made a number of important changes to aid that we provide to poor families. And in fact, the federal government does more now than it's ever done before. But much of that aid is directed to families who are working when they're working. And much less now goes to families at the very bottom who want to work and really think of themselves as workers, but lose a job and then things sort of spiral downward from there.
So, Luke Schaefer, how many people are we talking about?
We went to a household survey where Census Bureau representatives go and talk to tens of thousands of families. And when we ran the numbers, I think we were both astounded to find that as of 2011, in any given month, there were about 1.5 million households with about 3 million children reporting cash incomes of no more than $2 per person per day. And that was more than a doubling since 1996. And from there, we started to look for other sources of data to say, have circumstances gotten worse for families at the very bottom? And we can see it in a sharp spike in child homelessness. Actually, just recently, we could see it in a dramatic increase in plasma sales of one of the big survival strategies as we went out and met people like Jessica Compton in Johnson City, Tennessee, is to sell your plasma, which has a benefit of being legal, but it's also a very taxing thing. And Jessica actually has a divot in her arm where she'd given plasma so often. So across all these sources of data, there's just this very consistent picture of declining circumstances among our nation's poorest families.
And yet all of the people who you talk to actually say that they want to work. You described Ray, who was a loyal worker at Walmart, twice cashier of the month, until one day when she had no transportation to get into work and she was told not to bother coming back.
Ray's story really illustrates the degradation of the relationship between the employee and the employer. There are 100 people standing right there ready to take Ray's place despite the fact that she was a meticulous worker and memorized the barcodes of all the common produce items.
I think we were both taken with the fact that despite these bad conditions, our families really thought of themselves as workers. And in fact, it's not so different, I think, from what a lot of your listeners might think of about what they like about their
job. Satisfaction and a sense of accomplishment. Mm-hmm. And yet, because she didn't have the money, the cash flow, she didn't have the money for childcare, she was forced to leave her children in the care of an uncle who ended up molesting her daughter.
What was really going on there is very, very common among our families. They can't afford a place of their own. Housing instability is ubiquitous. Sometimes families end up in homeless shelters. Often families end up in a series of precarious double-ups. Often parents can't be that picky about whose couch they're going to be sleeping on any given night. And you just multiply the number of adults who could possibly put children at risk. So as we begin to sort of notice the trauma accumulating with these kids, most of the trauma was occurring with this repeated perilous doubling up.
And other perilous situations that they're forced to put themselves in, if they have no cash, but they may have some food stamps. You know, there are stories in your book about people who essentially feel they have no alternative but to sell food stamps, which is illegal, as we know, so that's dangerous, or use the food stamps for food and then resell the food. Tell us about those stories.
A lot of times we'd see families who might have food stamps, now called SNAP, or a fewer number who might have a housing subsidy. But we wanted to know, does cash matter in 21st century America? And I think the best evidence of that is the work that people put in to generate just that little bit of cash. So a mom or a parent would go in to a grocery store that they knew did this sort of thing, and they'd swipe through, say, $100 of fake groceries that didn't exist, and then they would get $60 back from the till. So the grocery store was taking a $40 cut for engaging in the transaction, and that just tells you how much that little bit of cash matters for these families. They're willing to give up 40% of the purchasing power of those SNAP dollars to get that flexibility. And when you look at what they...
Because they need the cash for transport, they need the cash for to pay for temporary housing or gas
underwear.
Or
mm-hmm.
other things, as you say, basic
exactly.
clothing items. What do you say to those, including several of the Republican presidential candidates, who maintain that people need to pull themselves up by their own bootstraps, start with a low-wage job, and work their way up?
That's what they're doing. 7 in 10 of these families have an adult in the workforce at some time during the year. They are desperate to work. Often they've spent a decade or more sort of trying to hang on to the ragged edge of work and be responsible parents. But finding work that is flexible enough, you know, we all need jobs with a little bit of give, right? And what's happened at the bottom of the labor market is these jobs have less and less give. And in fact, we're subjecting people at the bottom to work conditions that no middle-class person, at least a parent, would accept.
Meaning that if your child is sick,
exactly.
or if you miss the bus, or if you don't have money for public transportation, any of those reasons for missing your job, that you're just simply out of work.
You're just simply out of work.
So what can be done to change this? You have three principles that you describe saying that this is the way to end a situation in which one of the highest income countries in the world has, by your description, millions of people living on $2 in cash a day.
We need to have programs and policies that I think dramatically expand the number of decent jobs that are out there. And then obviously housing is a tremendous need, not just for the extreme poor, but far up the income ladder, people seeing 40 or 50% of their incomes being eaten up by housing costs. And we think that every parent especially deserves to be able to raise their child in a place of their own. And then finally, sometimes work won't work. And we think in 21st century America, we need some sort of cash safety net. And the one we have is not even working as it was intended to work when it was passed in 1996. So it's time to really go back and have a look at that and make it work a lot better for people like Jennifer and Ray and Jessica.
So in simple terms, right to work, right to housing, and a reimagining of the social safety net.
That's right.
I like it.
The book is $2 a Day. The authors are Catherine Eden and Luke Schaefer, and they are with us here. Thank you so much for joining us.
Oh, it was wonderful
to be
here.
It was our pleasure.